ผมทราบแต่ยังไม่ได้ทันที่รู้เดี๋ยวไปทันเว้ย
Good morning, honorable members and officials, many friends, director general, and all other colleagues who are here. And apologies
from Mr. Masungu and Mr. Masoko.
Oh.Can we then invite the, because you know what I'm going to have to do today is the presentation by the department on the annual report in order for us to work out our response to the portfolio committee. They're going to get these to pull up and make them recommendations based on what the department and then also what is our international conversation. I think we should invite the minister to start to introduce some of the issues that you may want to introduce, and then you'll make the presentation. We won't wait really for this one, otherwise it's going to take long, because you don't know where they are now, the technicians. Honorable Minister.
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning to members of the committee and other colleagues that are in the room. Thank you for this invitation to share with you firstly, presentation on the annual report, secondly, a presentation on the activated campaign. Just 2 points to note on the annual report, firstly, the period 2013-2014. Secondly, that during that year under review, we had a change in Minister and Deputy Minister in the Ministry. July 2013, Minister Baloyi left the ministry and Minister Sanoli came in, and Deputy Minister Karim left and Deputy Minister Nell came. Now, the third point is that the way in which the objectives are framed and so on is with reference to a period around 2012, so that context can be borne in mind as we go through this process. The presentation will be made by one of my colleagues on the desk in a moment, and when it's finished, Dr. Mwala will do the traditional leaders affair presentation, and then I'll come back and do the back to the table. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
The Minister has outlined the purpose of the presentation. We have to present the annual report for the Department of Cooperative Governance as well as the Department of Traditional Affairs.
Can I just interrupt you for 1 second? My apologies. I should apologize to the Minister of Kerala. He has to go on our behalf to a tripartite meeting that's taking place in Luanda, Angola, between DRC and Angola and South Africa, which will be the one that takes the next few days. So, with apologies.
Thank you. The presentation outline is according to 3 sections. We'll firstly be presenting the DCOG annual performance report, as well as the Department of Traditional Affairs annual report. The focus will be on the progress achievement on the predetermined objectives, and it will be outlined per program. When you go to slide 4, this is just a reminder that the ministry has 2 departments under each, the Cooperative Governance as well as Traditional Affairs. and we are mandated by the Constitution, the chapters outlined, chapter 3, 6, 7, and 12. And we continue to strive towards building a capable and developmental local government and traditional institution. The vision outlined in our annual performance plan is that of an integrated, responsive, and accountable decision system of corporate governance. This vision is closely aligned to the aim of Chapter 13 of the National Development Plan, which strives for a capable and developmental state. Our mission, as well as is to facilitate corporate governance, ensuring that all spheres of government work together to build the state and fulfill the developmental goals. We also have strategic goals that we have outlined during our strategic planning session. We had outlined 8 strategic goals. Key among them are around the implementation of policy framework, the improvement of access to basic services and sustainable infrastructure, the implementation of the community work program, and ensuring that we have efficient and effective cooperative governance institutions, and ensure that we also fight corruption and improve ethical conduct. The other is in relation to the integrated data management center, and as well as ensuring that our work committees are functional, and to support all of that, we have the ACE at the strategic goal of ensuring that we have internal financial and administrative capabilities that are able to support the work that we do. We also have aligned the, our strategic objectives to the MTF. These are the 5 issues which I will not go through. To get into the specific programs, we have 6 programs in the past financial year that that were responsible for driving the projects that were outlined in the annual performance plan. In the main, the line function would be the policy, research, knowledge management, the governance and intergovernmental disaster management, provincial and municipal government support, and the infrastructure and economic development. The project will be outlined in detail within the presentation. Now, getting into the actual progress of the achievement of the predetermined objectives. In summary, when you look at the bottom table there, the trend over the MTAF from 2011-12 to 2013-14, you can see a significant improvement of from 45% to 75% in terms of the achievement data. In the current financial year, we have achieved 75% of the planned 52 target, which means that we have 12 projects that we have achieved, and those were being implemented, and the interim report as well was achieved. The only one of the projects that we have planned was not achieved. With regard to program one, our objective was to improve the strategic management, ensuring that we communicate the work that we do, and as well as improving the capacity of municipalities in communication efforts, to provide legal support, to improve internal strategic governance processes, and as well as focus on supporting municipalities on evidence-based performance. The first slide on predetermined objectives is outlined the program. The first program of administration, as you can see in brackets, these updates, I must apologize, these updates were not in the text that was circulated, but we just made it better for reference purposes that the pages that are outlined on the screen are referring to the page numbers on the annual report, the shrinked annual report. We had planned that there would be a post-audit action plan developed, and it was developed but not fully implemented due to other dependencies that could not be page 48 of the annual report. Still on page 48, we managed to transfer all payments that were made according to the compliance with the Division of Revenue Act. In terms of the implementation of the human resource plan, the human resource report and proposed organizational structure were submitted to the DPSA in December, and the structure was not approved due to the additional information that was required from DPSA. So that process is still under consideration. We also have a project on ensuring that the performance management system is improved. We had plans to make assessments of the state of performance management systems within four provinces. We managed to do that in Free State, Mpumalanga, Limpopo, and the Northern Cape, but we couldn't ensure that after that the necessary training was conducted. This was due to delays with our engagement with the local government city. The monitoring and evaluation component also had planned to develop local government indicators and as well as municipal indicators, and this process is also under is also in progress, as we are also considering aligning these indicators to the best basics that the minister will be touching on later in the presentation. Still under administration, in terms of the internal audit, 18 out of the 23 planned internal audits were completed. We also ensured that the anti-corruption and whistleblowing policies, fraud prevention policies, and risk register were approved. We managed to ensure that 103 municipalities were capacitated with communication strategies, media engagement, and there were also rapid response and crisis communication in partnership with SALGA and GCIS. The risk management policy and strategy were also developed and approved. With regard to the work we're doing in relation on international relations, we managed to have donor agreements with GIZ and Nestas Africa. These were concluded within before March 2014. We also had ensured that learning exchange with Belgium and Jamaica and Cuba and Jamaica took place. Cuba and BRICS were also conducted. We also had four MOUs that were concluded. These were done with Palestine and DRC and Angola. The only project that I outlined earlier that was not achieved is the development of the monitoring evaluation system. This project is also being reconsidered within the back-to-basics approach, which is one of the key issues of ensuring that we properly know what is happening at the municipal level, and therefore we need to have proper monitoring evaluation system that will provide us with strategic intelligence on the work that we need to respond to. So this project will also continue under the practice basics. The second program is the policy research and knowledge management. This program is more focused on ensuring that we have improved information and communication technologies. We have also managed knowledge management capacity within the department, and that we undertake research that would inform policy improvements as we continue to implement the work that we do with provinces and municipalities. And one of the key issues that has been done within this program is that there were four research papers on service delivery protests that were done. And, the others were on municipal financing and as well as on progress on service delivery protests. So those are the key issues with regards to the research paper that informs our whether we need to change policy or really moving forward. The others are related to our internal, improving our internal business processes in terms of IT, as well as IT hardware and software. We have the third program, which is mainly on governance and intergovernmental relations, mainly focusing on facilitating the implementation of policy and legislation to strengthen cooperative governance across all spheres, as well as strengthening the functionality of work committees and enhancing community participation, the improvement of financial management, expenditure and revenue enhancement, the strengthening measures to combat corruption and unethical conduct. As members could see, some of these issues have come out more clearly in the perspective focus areas where we need to be talking of the need for us to improve financial management, governance, fighting corruption, and as well as ensuring that we involve citizens in the work that we do. In terms of the achievement status, assessment of the functionality of the IGR, district IGR structures was not finalized. The work was started, and it will continue within this financial year. A report is expected to be presented to the minister before the end of this month, and members will also be afforded the opportunities requested to get details on that. There's also the work that was partially achieved on the support monitoring intervention bill. This bill was developed in 2013, was submitted to structures, and the governance administrative cluster on the 11th of February recommended that another discussion be held. The bill is currently being discussed with the minister, and it is on route for processing so that we ensure that we finalize it by the end of this financial year. There were 2,059 work operational plans that were developed and implemented in 125 local municipalities across provinces. 128 municipalities were also supported to implement the municipal infrastructure grant program. 30 credit control and debt collection policies have been assessed, and municipalities have been informed on of policy gaps that were identified. Still on governance and intergovernmental relations, there were 30 municipalities that were monitored and assessed with respect to compliance with the Municipal Property Rights Act, and guidance was provided to those who were not complying. There were 34 out of 40 ethics committees that were established, and members were also trained in municipalities. There is a report on allegations referred, and investigation report on allegations of corruption. The first program is on National Disaster Management Center. The key among the objectives is the improved the proactive and responsive capability of disaster management centers, as well as to support the establishment and effective operation of fire services, to enhance the disaster management capabilities across the three spheres, and to ensure that we strengthen the capacity of disaster fraternity with providing support to 15 disaster management students through the disaster risk management bursaries that were afforded in 2013. The disaster management program, disaster management center progress, which is on page 70 and 71, have achieved all the planned projects. The draft white paper on fire services was submitted for process to the office of the minister. The disaster management amendment bill was approved. The quantification of drought hazard vulnerabilities and capacity were completed. The National Disaster Management Capacity Building Action Plan was also developed, and the Disaster Management Monitoring Evaluation Framework was developed and presented to the National Disaster Management Advisory Forum in March 2014. So all those planned targets were achieved. The fifth program, the provincial and municipal government support, which has the objective of ensuring that we support provinces in discharging their mandates, as well as to ensure that we facilitate development of efficient and effective workforce within local government, and ensuring that we enhance the delivery of services within the communities. In reference on page between page 81 and 84, there were nine provinces that were monitored to support municipalities to fill vacancies in terms of the Municipal Systems Act, and nine provincial workshops and 23 district workshops were conducted to improve the development planning capacity in municipalities outside metros and secondary cities. We also have a draft discussion document on organized local government, and the draft bill draft bill of municipal demarcation has also been developed and consulted internally and with external stakeholders. 100% of targeted municipalities were supported to implement the remedial actions that were emanating from the monitoring of the implementation of the municipal systems. Still on provincial and municipal government support, and section 105 and 106 guidelines were developed but were not approved due to rescheduling of the MINMEC as there were changes in administration. There also the integrated MH development framework was developed and finalized, and work is still continuing in terms of ensuring that the framework is rolled out and popularized. 31 municipalities were trained on the GIS. These were in Northern Cape, Northern Northwest, and Limpopo and Mpumalanga province. There was also a status report on the intergovernmental planning that was developed, which focused on the policy and legislative proposal on the development of the IGPF. Still continue with the provincial municipal government support. The local government competency framework for senior managers was created in January, and the competency assessment decree was developed and piloted and validated. We now have also draft regulations that were developed and consulted with key stakeholders. 80 municipalities were supported to develop and implement R&R strategies, and also 10 additional municipalities were supported following the demand in terms of the support that was needed. The last program within the DCOG is the infrastructure and economic development, and focus here is to ensure that we implement the community work program to ensure that we reach the 1 million work opportunities that are targeted for end of 2015. To also ensure that we promote economic development at a local level, improve delivery of basic services to households, and ensure that there is improved delivery of basic services by updating the new policy framework. We are in progress in terms of the community work program in terms of the targets that were planned. Cumulatively, 216,929 work opportunities have been created by end of 31 March 2013. And the community work program was implemented in at least two wards in 140 municipalities across provinces. There's also a clean campaign that the community work program is engaged in, and cleanup work was coordinated and supported in 11 municipalities. In terms of ensuring that there is improved economic development, there were two business development forum structures that were established in Sakradu and Umgungundlovu district municipalities, and catalytic business ventures were also identified. There's also the framework document that was concluded on the basis of a comprehensive strategy for countries. With regard to still on the community work program, the MIG policy updated framework Dr. Nwaile will be able to present.
Okay, colleagues. I think we are going to discuss once the presentation has been made. I think that's fine. Same one. I agree with that. I know that we are interested in traditional leadership. Maybe we should allow the presentation shorter. Do you want to take us through? Okay. So thank you very much for the presentation.
Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Honorable Minister, Deputy Minister, colleagues, I'm going to take you through the Department of Personal Affairs presentation. I'm going to just take you through the vision, and in terms of the goals, I'll not spend time on the goals. I've had a vision because I think it forms the basis of our work. It's an integrated traditional affairs for sustainable development and social cohesion. And then we have the mission, the goals. I'll move to the slide on program overview of the department. The first program is administration, the second one research, policy and legislation. Third program is institutional support and coordination. And we have the first entity, which we refer to as in-house, National House of Traditional Leaders, and the second entity, Commission on Traditional Leadership Disciplines and Trends. The performance, there's a blank, there's a slide there. But anyways, I think it's summarized by the next, it's not showing on the screen there, but it's the next slide there summarizes the slide that is not visible. There is just something that I wanted to highlight on the slide that is not visible on the copy slide here. It's just a trend analysis from the copy before I come to this one. The slide 37, yeah. Thanks, thanks. Trend analysis in 2011-2012, the department attained 46% of the targets. The following year, 2012, 2013, which was the second year of the existence of the department, it achieved 54%. And the year under review, 2013-14, it achieved 97%, which is the slide 38, it gives the detailed breakdown of the different programs. I'm not going to spend time on that. And then the first program, which is administration, there are four bubbles that I'm going to take you through. It's basically to show, you know, that we're establishing our systems because we're still very young as well. And we also reflect cultural activities and heritage within administration, as it was led by the DG. The first slide, we have the outreach development program, which was focusing on legislation and government programs that impact on traditional communities. That was achieved. And the eight national houses and eight provincial houses were taken through this program. And we also assess the traditional councils, we profile them, and then we also developed corporate governance framework, and performance monitoring and evaluation framework was developed as well. Slide number 41, 10 marketing campaigns, as the department was still telling you, 24 media statements, service delivery improvement plan and service charter developed, and DTA quarterly and annual performance reports submitted as part of the compliance and so on. The last one, the annual performance plan was also developed for 2014-15. And then slide 42, we have the cultural attraction, heritage, and sacred sites within traditional core and sand communities identified in four provinces. A report on the department's engagement with the core and sand leadership and communities. And we also had dialogue with the core and sand. And there were three interfaith chapters that were engagement with the interface inspector on the program, on what the department is doing, and also relevant stakeholders within the sector engaged to develop and promote identified cultural tourism sites. The second program, which is research, policy, and legislation, the program had to achieve the following objectives: to enhance knowledge management within traditional affairs, and to enhance alignment and standardization in the regulatory, institutional, and support framework for traditional affairs across provinces and municipalities. Slide 45, predetermined objectives, reports drafted on the reconstitution of traditional councils in respect of six provinces. And the next one, report on status of community authorities and independent headmen, headwomen developed. And the other one, status quo report in respect of senior traditional leaders who are recognized, they are basically landless traditional leaders. All these were achieved. Slide number 46, consultations on draft protocol guidelines for kingships and queenships conducted with relevant stakeholders. And also protocol guidelines for senior traditional leaders in two provinces to develop report with recommendations on the status of community authorities and independent headmen, headwomen. Norms and standards for the appointment of recognition of headmen and headwomen were also developed. Slide number 47, annual report on the implementation of the empowerment program was developed, that was achieved, partnership framework implementation was implemented in eight provinces. Annual report on capacity building implementation plan. And the induction manual is not achieved. It's an error. It's partially achieved. And the cultural policy for needy children within traditional communities was also developed. This I'll skip, and then I go to the National House. The National House on slide 15. The National House seeks to achieve the following objectives: to coordinate participation in and monitor service delivery and rural development, to facilitate the improvement capacity and capability of the National House of Traditional Leaders in order to deliver on its mandate, to facilitate and coordinate the inputs into legislation and policy development processes relating to traditional affairs, facilitate and coordinate engagements to promote the national agenda. And the slide, I mean the bubbles on predetermined objectives for the National House. The National House visited 78 traditional councils and engaged those councils on service delivery and rural development initiatives. And the evaluation report on the training provided to the National House of Traditional Leaders, report on the National House visit to kings and queens in line with the National House Act. We provided support to members of the National House through training on report writing, media handling, public speaking, etc. And the report on referred legislation and policies to the National House as required by legislation. And the disputes and claims were supposed to process all claims and disputes of traditional leadership by December 2015. And their target was 360 claims and disputes cases finalized, and this was achieved. And the challenges, we have just a few challenges. The same non-compliance with the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act on reconstitution of traditional councils, especially in the Kokom, Mpumalanga, Eastern Cape. Remedial action, DTA has started intervening on failure to comply, providing technical support. We have started in Limpopo and will continue to support the remaining provinces. The establishment of community authorities in some provinces, saying DTA conducted some research and compiled a report with recommendations which will be considered and implemented during 2014-15. And the proliferation of headmanship across the country, DTA has also researched and compiled a report which will inform the development of national norms and standards for appointment of headmen and headwomen in 2014-2015. And in conclusion, the progress that was partially achieved, which is development of implementation of the induction manual for Tertian leadership was carried over to 2014-15, and it has been achieved in the first quarter of 2014-15 financial year. And that's the end of the presentation. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you for the presentation. And, okay, let us proceed then. Then we are happy traditional leadership now. Well, when you are smiling like this, you're the most impressed, I think. Okay, then when you go home, you're going to report positive levels. Okay. Yes, sir.
So, sir, I'll continue with the presentation on the progress with the Municipal Infrastructure Support Agency. Just to give a bit of a background, the responsibilities of the Municipal Infrastructure Support Agency is to ensure that we have effective infrastructure planning, and that they are also responsible for delivery, operations and maintenance, as well as capacity development. Just to go to the achievement status on slide 77, we see that out of a total of there were 9 projects that were totally that were achieved, 7 that were partially achieved, and 5 that were not achieved. So the progress status is 43% in terms of achievement. When we get into the details in terms of progress per program, the administration, as you can see, there's fairly similarities in terms of the work that needs to be done within this administration and the administration of DCOG. And the minister also pointed out that there would be a consideration of some kind of a shared model where we ensure that we optimize usage of resources. So I'll just go straight to the technical support progress report, which is on page 85. With regards to technical support that was provided, there were 85 of the identified 108 municipalities that were supported with the diagnostic assessment and integrated support plans developed. This was not achieved because the target was 108. We also had 105 of the planned 108 business plans and PSP project implementation plan, which are aligned to the ISP that were developed. So there were also some of them that were standing. But we managed to achieve 108 municipalities. We managed to support 108 municipalities by providing technical management, technical and management support. 28 out of the planned 21 municipalities were supported to reduce sanitation and infrastructure services backlogs. And 24 out of the planned 21 municipalities were supported to reduce water infrastructure and services backlogs. There were also 44 out of the planned 10 municipalities that were supported with the licensing of waste disposal sites. 12 municipalities were also supported to improve water quality. 6 out of the planned 5 municipalities also received technical support in terms of reducing electricity infrastructure and services backlogs. 10 municipalities were supported to address ESCOM bulk theft. We also did not achieve the target of ensuring that 10 municipalities were supported to develop and implement waste management plans. Only 3 were supported. Still on technical support, we managed to support 9 out of 10 municipalities to reduce access road and stormwater blockages. We could not ensure that 10 municipalities were supported to address road and road classification and ownership gaps. Only 2 were saying also 18 municipalities were supported to improve infrastructure grant financial performance. Out of the planned 34 trainee water process controllers were deployed to municipalities, and 84 municipal officials were also supported through training for trace testing and artisans. We also ensured that 232 of the planned 230 apprentice graduates were supported for trace testing and artisans. The project that was not achieved was there were no absorption of young graduates and assistant process controllers that took place as planned. However, 50 students were awarded bursaries to study in technical professions. There was also 129 out of a planned 100 municipal officials that attended technical training courses that were facilitated by MISA. And the third one supposed to be not achieved as development and implementation of litigation management strategy was not achieved. Nine MISA employees received mentoring towards attending registration in technical professions. There were also two MOUs signed with external role players and eight out of the planned four steering committee meetings with strategic partners in capacity development were also held. And that's the performance in terms of the municipal infrastructure support agent. Thanks.
Activities of the labor force, which is an issue in some of our municipalities.
reforms create difficulties. Slide 6 makes reference to governance, and that's, I'm not going to read all of them if colleagues don't mind, but they have the documents in front of them, whether regular and proper council meetings are held and proper decisions are made. For example, some colleagues here have been asking whether policies on pursuance or in pursuance of implementing the municipal rates or property rates act have been properly taken by municipalities. Public participation, the execution of local government mandates in terms of the constitution, how are politicians and the administration interacting with each other, and whether rules are being followed and are properly in place. Slide 7 looks at basic service delivery. So the one element would be the operations part, are the services actually getting to where they need to. The second is maintenance of infrastructure and how much is spent and how do we encourage better repairs and maintenance of infrastructure. And third, new investments and the manner in which those are being executed. But, and also some of the challenges that we face now. Presently, electricity cutoffs by municipalities not paying their due to Eskom. The theft of infrastructure assets, I mean, all of us have now become familiar with so-called cable theft. Our deputy minister has become quite an expert in this area. So he can quite readily give you a one-hour lecture on how it works now. Slide 8 is on financial management. And here, the key element is whether annual financial statements are being submitted to the Auditor General in their proper form and shape. You'd be aware that we've been talking about this. The availability of records is a key determinant of whether you get a disclaimer or not in a municipality. And of course, revenue collection, servicing of debt, and the functionality of supply chain arrangements. Slide 9 looks at institutional issues, whether we have a competent and knowledgeable leadership, whether we are filling key management positions with the right kind of capabilities in the areas defined, the actual qualifications and experience of personnel, and continued training and development for personnel as well, including relationships with organized labor. We have, as a team, met both of the two key unions in the municipal terrain earlier in our administration, and will continue to do so as we go on. Slide 10 is the key issue, community satisfaction. Are the communities that municipalities service happy with what they receive? Are the responses ones that the community is happy with? Are municipalities accessible? And do municipalities communicate regularly? The next few slides, if you don't mind, I won't go through the detail. Slides 12, 13, and 14 are a summary of what our findings are in respect of the characters or the character that each of the categories of municipalities demonstrate. So those that are doing well on slide 12, those that are not doing or could do better, slide 13, and those that are not doing well, slide 14. So slide 12 would be self-evidently strong political and administrative leadership and the right amount of money being collected and the right amount of money being spent on the right things. Potential to do well, record keeping, low collection rates, and so on are areas that need to be matched against very good financial management and records. And councils operating reasonably well. So if we attend to the fault lines, we could do better. Those that are not doing well clearly have stability issues and political administrative interface issues, high vacancy rates, incompetent staff, planning being a weak function. The next slide, 15, gives you a quick summary visually of the fact that we have about a third of the municipalities that are doing well, a third that have the potential to do well, and a third approximately that are not doing well. Okay. Slide 16 summarizes what are the key features of those three categories of municipalities. And then we move on to what we mean by back to basics. Now, the essential thesis here, Chairperson, is that if three quarters of the municipalities, particularly in the area of the municipalities that are not doing well and those that could do better, focus on certain basic areas. same time, we must leave scope for more innovative things to be done once the basics are in place. And the key is also, in terms of the Constitution, to ensure that the performance indicators that we expect are in fact achieved by each of the municipalities. And let's tell you what we mean in more detail and how we intend to get there. So, slide 18 on page 9, our approach would be to get all municipalities out of the dysfunctional state. If we have none in the last category, it will be a great achievement over the next couple of years. Two, support municipalities in the middle category to progress further on, or just stay there and do better incrementally. And third, support and incentivize municipalities that are doing well to do better and do more innovative things. And clearly, it's in the interest of all of us that corruption and fraud is tackled. The next slide on page 10 sends a clear message. Ideally, we want no service failures, but if there are, then there must be the appropriate level of responsiveness and urgency in dealing with it. Don't take 2 days to do something that can be done in 2 hours, is the basic point. The next two slides, 20 and 21, is a visual representation of, again, basic services operating. 22 might be, if you like, the five key pillars of getting the basics right. The first on the left is putting people first. In other words, the dignity and the decent environment in which people live is the absolute priority, or should be the absolute priority for every municipality, as is the necessity to communicate regularly and properly with municipalities. Second, adequate and community-oriented service provision. Third, good governance and transparent administration. Fourth, sound financial management and accounting. And fifth, robust institutions with the right caliber of staff. The next few slides elaborate on each of these blocks. So, slide 23, what does it mean to put people first? Self-evidently respect their dignity, offer efficient service delivery, water, sanitation, refuse removal, waste management, and so on, and communicate regularly both about plans but also about delivery on the plans as well, and be seen to be addressing allegations of fraud and corruption. Merely giving speeches about that is not good enough. The next slide, I apologize, the numbering went off a bit, but it will be 24. What do we mean by efficient service delivery? So this would again involve planning. And ideally, every municipality should have a 10-year plan for infrastructure development, so that as the money becomes available, those plans can in fact be executed. Not the other way about, which frequently happens. Wait for the money and then start planning. And then you don't spend the money in the fiscal year in which you actually have the money allocated. Ensure that municipalities invest in new infrastructure more efficiently and at a faster pace. Improve the operations of infrastructure, but also the maintenance. Enforce the 7% budget allocation of OPEX towards infrastructure maintenance. Let municipalities and ourselves understand the state of infrastructure. There are many parts of the country where infrastructure is now 30, 40 years old, whether it's the water infrastructure or the electricity infrastructure. Different departments do have a sense for what the challenges are, and we need to start planning how we begin to get the balance right between maintenance and replacement on the one hand, and investment in new infrastructure on the other hand. There's also a focus on ensuring that the municipal infrastructure grant is spent properly. Slide 25 on good governance is self-explanatory, accountability, transparency, etc. Slide 26 is equally self-explanatory on financial management, from record keeping to making sure there's no wasteful expenditure. This is quite a popular sport among some of the municipalities, wasting money on inappropriate sponsorships and all sorts of things that they shouldn't actually be getting involved in. And the parliamentary committees, I think, can play a more important role in ensuring that we get the right disciplines in place. Similarly, we talk about supply chain functions. The next slide, which is slide 27, is acting against corruption. You've heard us on this before. there should be more serious consequences for corruption and fraud and maladministration. And there are discussions between the department and the directors general and certain other authorities to look at issues like asset forfeiture and other forms of enforcement. Slide 28 is about responsive and robust administration. Here again, capable people and proper performance management. The issue of relationships between management and organized labor, which needs a lot of attention. Setting up a shared service skills at the district level, and having the right kind of development strategy for municipalities. Slide 59 we've dealt with in terms of communications. Slide 30 is a point that links up with the DTA report you heard earlier on, and that is how do we develop the right relationships and the right modus operandi between constitutional structures on the one hand and the structures of traditional leadership on the other hand, and ensure that they work harmoniously on as a fundamental element, but also work out a way of playing a complementary role in terms of development. The next two slides cover the Interministerial Committee that President Zuma has set up, which our ministry is required to chair. And the slide 32 actually gives you a better reflection of the challenge that we face even in the parliamentary context, which is that much of what we do is siloed. There is no proper integration in both planning and in delivery, and that ultimately our ambition should be that whilst we have national plans, everything happens in the local space. The local integrated development plans that should actually embrace all of the plans of all of the departments within the local space. And that's the ambition, Chair, that we need to work towards. The slide is self-explanatory in terms of the different issues that we need to bring together. Slide 33 emphasizes the point on coordinated planning and delivery. The need to create a collaborative culture in government and perhaps in Parliament as well. And that the IDP must become the embracer of all the different plans that people have within the local space under the jurisdiction of a municipality. How are we going about implementing this? The next slide is again a nice picture just to keep you interested about what building capable local government is about. But the slide following that gives you, next one, what we're calling a differentiated approach in terms of how we deal with each category of municipality. Clearly, if you're doing well, you don't need the same kind of monitoring and intense intervention that a dysfunctional or problematic municipality might require. So what we have there, colleagues, is that if you look at the one on the right-hand side, intensive monitoring, interventions in one or through one or other aspect of the constitution or law, intervene to guarantee minimum standards. Section 165(7) of the constitution is quite emphatic about the necessity for national and provincial authorities to, I think the word used, regulate the delivery of services. And where there are difficulties, for whatever reason, in terms of a municipality providing the right services, then we must do that which is necessary in terms of the constitution. In the middle category is the medium intensity monitoring, ensure that there's effective performance of functions, closer supervision of service delivery with targeted interventions, possibly more supportive ones, and capacity building on the basis of a diagnosis of the gap that we perceive in this particular area. And then on the left-hand side, this is the area where more innovative things can happen, more support from the city support program or the rural support program, in order to enable those municipalities to move further up. Key to all of this is an evidence that is not here, which is how do we gather best practice across the country. I don't think we things happening or efficient things happening in the municipal space. They are happening. And there are several examples, as we demonstrated during the local government summit. And we need to do better work at firstly bringing those experiences together, and secondly creating a learning culture within the local government space so that we learn from one another, compete in a friendly and constructive way to outmatch each other in terms of how to improve some of the things that we do. The next slide is work in progress at the moment. So we are setting up systems that will integrate data from our own reports, treasury reports, the reports from Statistics of Africa and other agencies, so that we have a more holistic view of what is happening in the local space. Secondly, we are developing a real-time dashboard and a real-time analytical and intervention capability. So if something is seriously wrong, the municipality is unable to fix its water pump or whatever it is, can we ensure that either the Department of Water or ourselves reaches them as quickly as possible and helps them with that problem? Or if they don't want to do it, we'll do it for them as well. But we'll come back to Parliament and to you, Chairperson, and give you a further support probably earlier in the year on the progress that we're making in this regard. But the bottom line is we want to feel the pulse of every municipality every day to see what's going on, and where possible, offer the support or the type of intervention that is necessary in order to improve their performance. Some examples of interventions and investigations on the next slide: coordinate law enforcement over fraud and corruption, act against incompetent senior management, act against improper supply chain management processes, and as we were saying earlier on, we want to move every municipality out of the so-called not doing well category. Similarly, on the financial side, we've challenged the Institute for Municipal Finance Officers to work with us, and in the next audit cycle, ensure that there are no disclaimers. And that, for example, gets better record keeping going. Our timelines over the next 4 months are the ones on the slide that you are looking at now. But in addition to that, the remaining part of October and the rest of November, we want to launch Back to Basics with the provinces, in the provinces themselves. There was an excellent process, Chair, that we initiated about a month ago, which the Deputy Minister will talk about a little later, in one of the provinces, which yesterday gave some excellent results and provides the model for us to work with each of the provinces and improve their capacity to lend support to municipalities. Ideally, each municipality through SALGA can also adopt a back-to-basics approach, adapting it to their own particular environment. We're in the process of developing indicators of the various performance areas that we want to get municipalities to perform on and legislate them in some form. Create the infrastructure within the department in order that they're able to play the kind of new role that we expect them to play, which is focusing both on the operations of municipalities but also the policy framework. Some of the areas of policy review that have come up as a result of this exercise is strengthening district municipalities in some parts of the country and promoting the idea of shared services, the review of unviable municipalities. Colleagues and honorable members will know that we're heading for an election in 2016. If we don't take the immediate opportunity to change, bring about change in those areas where redrawing boundaries might result in greater financial viability, we're stuck for the next 7 years in this area. So this is an area that we're exploring with the demarcation board. And the differentiated approach that we've all been talking about, where we impose huge reporting requirements and other requirements on municipalities regardless of their size is something that is being explored. If we sum it up, this is what we said in the next slide in the budget vote, that we should actually encourage a set of non-negotiables. They again are self-evident. I'm sure all of us would agree. widen the revenue base, cut wastage and spend public funds prudently. No failures in services or restore them with urgency if the failures do happen. Hire competent staff and use the community works program to create job opportunities in the local environment and improve the living conditions of communities. So our approach here in sum is a very simple one. Every municipality, do the basics that you have to do. If you have the capability to do more, that's excellent. Secondly, we're going to monitor you very closely from a national level together with the provincial authorities. And thirdly, if we work together, I think we can actually create a much better environment in local government over the next few years. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister, for the presentation on task to face. Welcome, SACA's leadership, Angela, now. Another point that you want to add on this side, Honorable Minister, you have dealt with everything. Yeah, fine. Okay. Okay, colleagues, let us invite honorable members to engage with the presentation. If there's a need of engagement, if you are happy, you are happy. There's no sin in doing that. Okay. Honorable member.
It's just a question before we start. Are we going to look at the financial report? Chair, my question is on the irregular expenditure on your financial report. There's an amount of 417 million rand indicated as irregular expenditure, and the bulk of that seems to be on the community work program. Some of it was condoned as part of the process due to procurement issues, but I'd like to know what is the cause of that irregular expenditure and what you're doing to address it. Then, Chair, I was very pleased with the performance indicators that have been put up here. The department has done very well, literally across the board. Obviously, MISA has got some issues, but that's a new entity, and we anticipate that will improve going forward. But I'd like to particularly address the back-to-basics strategy, because I have a number of concerns here. Firstly, you spoke about interference in supply chain management, Minister. And one of the concerns that has been expressed to me repeatedly by councillors is that their involvement starts when the outcomes of the tender process are presented to them as a fait accompli. And then they are held accountable for the success or failure of a tender based on something that they've had no... I'm not looking for input from them, but certainly no knowledge of until it's essentially presented to them in council. So one of the questions that I have in that regard is opening up the tender process to public scrutiny so that people can see what is going on, why a particular tender has been awarded to a particular company early on in the process. Then I think there needs to be a tighter link between the back to basics program and back to basics initiative and the MISA. There needs to be closer integration between those two initiatives. One area that you haven't touched on is the financing of local government and how are we going to fund local government in the long term. You did mention right at the end about non-viable municipalities and looking at consulting with the demarcation board. We had the demarcation board in here last week, and they indicated that the outer boundary process was concluded except for one or two legal challenges that they are facing. So with that in mind, how can you then start looking again at non-viable municipalities? If that process is concluded and we're now in the ward delimitation phase, how can we then start talking about, again, redistricting or demarcating municipalities? Minister, you spoke about the competency requirements for senior management, and in particular municipal managers and financial managers. In fact, the other day you released a statement that said that something like 160 people Is it their qualifications? Exactly how do they not qualify? Then, Minister, you also spoke about corruption and taking a hard line against corruption. And I'm very pleased to hear that. I'd like to see some of the many forensic reports and investigations implemented and acted upon. And here we're talking about things like Nelson Mandela Bay's Kabuso report, Buffalo City's Ernst & Young report, which has been languishing for 4 years. Now this is an absolute failure for anyone to be held accountable. There are councillors implicated, there are municipal officials implicated, no one's being acted on. And it seems to be a lack of political will to do anything. We've recently had the Mandela funeral scandal in Buffalo City. I know that criminal charges have been laid, but that mayor is still in office. The municipal manager is still in place. No suspensions, no action taken. I was very pleased about your statement about maintenance and the enforcement of the 7% of OPEX. Two questions on that. First of all, is it enough? And secondly, how do you define maintenance? You know, maintenance on the one hand can be repairs, it can be upgrade. I'll give you an example. I used to be a councillor in Mblambe Municipality in Port Alfred, and we had a problem with water pressure. And I asked the then town engineer, can we do something about it? He said, yeah, I can put a pump on the line that will improve the water pressure. He said, but that's going to cause problems for me because the pipes there are old. And I'd have to replace all that piping, concrete asbestos piping or something, and he'd have to replace all of that piping in order to stop it from bursting when he increased the pressure on the line. Now, would that be regarded as maintenance or would it be an upgrade? So what I'm asking here is we need to clarify the definition of what is maintenance and how that ring fence 7% will be utilized. Just on, can we go back to that slide that had the three columns on it, just as I said a minute ago? That one. I have a question about the constitutionality of some of the interventions that you're proposing here. Particularly that COGTA oversees all appointments and participates in the process of Section 57 appointments. Now, how can that possibly be constitutional if you haven't placed the municipality under administration in terms of one of the various sections of the Act? Remembering that there are three interdependent spheres of government, and they have the right to determine their own people, personnel, and processes to a certain extent within the boundary of a legal framework. I'm just questioning the constitutionality of that. Last thing.
Just as an aside, we won't do anything that's unconstitutional.
Okay, I'm glad to hear that.
You know, the word constitutionality has become a nice little agitation point.
Okay.
Don't expect that. We are law-abiding citizens.
Good, I'm glad to hear that.
And we implement the law, so we're going to do what the Constitution allows us to do. As my senior counsel will explain to you in a moment.
Perhaps we can talk about Oakland sometime, Minister. Minister, then, on interventions, I was very pleased to see that the support monitoring and interventions bill will be coming back. Can we expedite that? Because obviously there are a number of issues around that. I did send you a question about it a while ago, and I'm very pleased to see that that's coming back to Parliament in the near future. My last comment was on the issue of disclaimers. You indicated that you'd like to see all municipalities move from disclaimed audits. Is this slide here, aim for no disclaimers in the next financial year. And it was brought to my attention that Cunnilunt Municipality here in the Western Cape regularly gets a disclaimer because of an issue dating back to 2000 or thereabouts, when there was an investigation, criminal charges were laid, a whole lot of documentation was delivered to the police or the Scorpions or whoever it was at the time, 40 boxes of documentation. And that documentation, which were the financial records of the municipality, subsequently disappeared. And as a result, result, this municipality gets disclaimer after disclaimer after disclaimer. It's not based on their current performance, it's based on something that happened in the past. Now, before anyone says I'm playing politics in the Western Cape, this is an ANC-run municipality that I'm trying to help here. Absolutely. I do think that this kind of thing needs to be looked at how current the audit process is and the relationship between an unqualified audit and the current activities rather than historical backlogs. So those are a lot of questions that I've asked you. And thank you very much for your presentation.
Let us invite the minister. There were too many comments and too many questions. I'll come back to you, sir. I think let us do that. Honourable Minister and the Chief.
If we don't mind taking more questions, Chair.
Okay.
If there's overlap, then we can deal with it.
Okay, that's fine. Honourable Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning, colleagues, Minister and Deputy Minister and the team. I will not be long, like my height, with the questions. I'll try to be very, very brief. With them. Firstly, I would want to obviously congratulate the department on the achievements. I think the achievements are very good, and I think that they are inspiring and motivating moving forward, particularly on the basis of the factor basis which the Minister has presented. I just do have a few questions, Honourable Chair. It's on the issue of the turnaround time for the disputes, the claims and disputes, particularly to traditional leadership. Just over the weekend, I was in the Northwest in Homohom, and we'd find that communities confused two traditional leaders in one area, and of course that's a stumbling block and it's an issue that's been going on for a while. So just on that one, what is the turnaround time in which you sit for these investigations and resolving the disputes to restore stability in communities? Secondly, Honourable Minister, you spoke about the issue of municipalities and viable municipalities, and of course how you're looking at ensuring that we disestablish those moving forward. And of course there is a process already underway now. For example, in KZN, Vulamehlo will be cut into two, a section goes to Echengwin and a section goes to Ntoni, etc. I mean, there's quite a number of those. Now, I just want to find out what model is being applied to monitor the movement of assets, and you spoke, there was a slide on lifestyle audits here, because Vulamehlo, which I'm a resident of, I can tell you now that all of a sudden everybody involved in that municipality is living the high life because they are en route to, you know, disestablishing that municipality. So whatever comes out at the end of it, I mean, there will be a shell which will be handed over to a Echengwin and Ntoni. So I just want to find out what model is being used to monitor the mergers and the disestablishment to ensure that there's no manga-manga business going on. And then to the issue of the Back to Basics initiative, which is a good initiative and will probably need our support as well. Minister, just two brief questions. One is the issue of capacity. I think Honourable Marlon has touched on the one issue of the CFOs, which you spoke about just recently. Whether a comprehensive skills audit actually to municipalities is going to be done in order to ensure the success of the factor basics, because it will rest largely on ensuring that we've got the right people in the right positions with the right qualifications. And what corrective actions are going to be taken? I mean, and the CFOs that are in office now, whether those that are not qualified, what reason, I mean, whether we'd be able to remove people from positions if they were wrongly employed to begin with. I think that's the type of action that one would like to see. And of course, you know, that in all the other areas, your technical services directors and so on, and everybody in municipalities. I know it's a large scale exercise, but it's one which is necessary to ensure that the issue of back to basics comes to life. And then I see I remember this department obviously was previously provincial and local government affairs and now cooperative government. there does seem to be a greater emphasis on the functioning of municipalities and very little emphasis on the functioning of provincial governments. And I think that we probably need to strengthen that area in the interest of cooperative governance to ensure that we don't land ourselves in another Limpopo situation where you had to intervene and understand your previous portfolio. Because whilst you're trying to get local government correct, the second sphere, the middle sphere, which is the link between national and provincial government, if that is weak, then we run the risk of, you know, not doing justice to the issue of cooperative governance. So I'd like to see a greater emphasis into the assessment as a start into the operations and functioning of provincial governments. And my final point, Chair, goes to the issue of traditional leadership and traditional institutions. Whilst one is happy at the 97%, you know, achievement, I want to maintain, Chair, that this is a very high-level achievement. It's very macro, and we are not feeling these successes at grassroots and local level of traditional leadership in traditional institutions of government. And I think that moving forward, we need to build on the gains of, you know, the 97% achievements. That's very good. But if those are not translated into tangible and practical things you can feel at your typical Gwampung or the traditional authority in national, and then we are setting up this institution for a sort of failure. So I just want to see an emphasis of transcending now these, you know, the operations of the house itself to local level and begin to strengthen the, you know, the working relationships of the institutions. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay.
I need to coordinate, and I was given by my parents. That's why people teach when those titles are removed or fixed. Because they are not permanent. They are not permanent.
Oh, no, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
For the first time I hear you say
it. No. That's why I went to school. Yeah, if you go to school, that one is yours. Yeah, thank you. At page 8, Minister, there is of the first presentation slide 15. In terms of your MNE program, you are saying that the system that was supposed to be in place was put on hold, and I want to understand what could have been a reason for that particular decision. And in terms of municipalities, if I can take further that part of MNE, I believe that the bigger problem that municipalities have in terms of also performance and monitoring is that they don't have these units, some of them, or they are not functional. What is it that the department is putting in place in terms of dealing with that aspect? Because it's supposed to assist municipalities upfront to understand where the problematic areas are in terms of implementing their strategic objectives. The second one is on investigation report, like this forensic report, Minister. There is a lot of money. I have seen that the National Department of Conducted some, which I believe the research made in that respect is accessible, those documents are accessible at public. But the challenge is that there are a lot of reports commissioned by municipalities. And a lot of money is used in relation to that, but it is very difficult to have those reports made public for public access. And I don't know whether there is some point where you receive this report as a minister for you to look at that in relation to municipalities. I am informed last week I was told, and on my behalf by you, that a Kabusi report, even if yourself you can try your best, it's gone, it will never fly. I was told and I was shocked, because there's a lot of money that was put in that Kabusi report, and we're told, because it was delayed for more than 4 to 5 years. And the information on the Kabusi report that was there, it's not available, stolen. The Hawks have given up because it was delayed for a period of time for people to be able to take whatever they want to take in terms of available information. And we're worried that there is, again, the same municipality that has a history of delaying this forensic report, the IPTS report, in the national there. Again, the findings made. The same report is taking a long period, and we fear the same thing, that in the Kabusi report, that even now the Hawks have declared that it will never fly because of the long period. That when are we going to get answers in relation to this IPTS report? Because what is more worrying also in the relation to the IPTS is that the municipality itself does not run the whole functioning of the integrated public transport system. 90% of the work is outsourced, meaning even the information. Therefore, are you going to take action not only to the Nelson Mandela in relation to forensic reports that take a longer period of time before actioning is? And unfortunately, in the Nelson Mandela, people are also saying, Minister President Gordhan promised us, when I was Minister of Finance, that action should be taken. His instruction, by the way, to say action should be taken in the report, but action is not taken. And the lights are going down in the city. The third one, on MISA, I'm very concerned of the non-achievement in terms of private placement, in terms of assistance. I know the Department of Education is its strategic goal to make sure that we place as many artisans as possible. And if MISA provides technical support with necessarily technical skills that we need, I think Minister must give serious attention. It's not acceptable that that strategic institute is unable to recruit new blood for it to grow in within the institution, and that we can just get a pronouncement that they failed to place people, and at least we must get the reasoning behind why really in that respect a technical institution will fail to do so. On back to basics, I think I support this. When I heard about this, as a person of background also in local government in terms of qualification also, because local government, in the main, I think many people in particular in local government were so drawn into this concept of development and local government. And my worry with local government is that I don't know whether because of money, local government has shifted from the basics. Sanitary management, all these things we have listed, mean lighting, refuse collection, and all those things. And I was happy when you pronounced that, because that's what local government is supposed to be doing. Now, tender management, building houses, is not the core function of local government. And I know many local governments are very focused on getting accreditation. But the main services that they're supposed to implement, they are not. And I agree with you, and I like that. But how are we going to monitor minister that in terms of budgeting in municipalities, or are you having a plan to challenge municipalities that even their budgeting should be biased towards this basics program in terms of municipalities focusing on the areas of services that we want them to prioritize. And if they don't do that, what are we going to do in ensuring that they follow that program? We have seen your circular, your written to MECs in relation to qualifications, which is right. Is that going to end there? When are we going to see results in relation to that? And not only this one on qualifications, but also the other four points I think you have mentioned. Lastly, you know, Minister, I always get worried for you when you came and said you're going to claim municipalities. Municipalities, according to my view, because of the Municipal Financial Management Act and all other systems and all other legislations that were put in place, what Kevin was arguing and asking, the authority to dish out tenders was to some extent controllable and controlled. Because in the past, councillors used to sit from the beginning to the end in dishing out tenders, and which caused a lot of problems. But at least the legislative framework that is available was able to control political office bearers at the level of municipalities in terms of dishing out these things. It's only the executive mayor when they sign at the end and so on and so forth. The main corrupt people, minister, are political office bearers outside the municipality as an institution. We've seen recent reports about politicians outside. I'm finishing. I'm just finishing this one. Influencing municipalities on what to do. Swane is an example. Nelson Mandela is another example. How are you going to eradicate corruption in that respect? I said to somebody who asked me this weekend, and I said, if Minister President Gordon is going to succeed in that respect, he might lose his job the following day. Thank you.
Because I can get some rest. Thanks. Let me distribute the questions to my colleagues before they fall asleep. Irregular expenditure, DG Madam Seller, back to basics concerns, I'll deal with the first one. Financing local government, I'll deal with that. Competency requirements, Tender 4C, the forensic reports and so on. Chamber of course, he can also help me with the maintenance question, constitutionality, senior counsel, the intervention bill, we will note your comments, tenor land, okay, I'll deal with that quickly, turnaround time for disputes, DG Noyla. Unviable municipality, what model to move assets, Mr. Porsi, CFOs, we'll clarify that for you in a moment. I'll deal with provincial and local government selling. The point that Mr. Sengo makes about high level achievements versus what you feel on the ground, Mr. Noyla as well. Mr. Banga's point around the MNE of the Sudeco, municipal performance units, Dr. Sudeco, if you can try that, otherwise, Mr. Porsi. On the forensic reports, the Deputy Minister and I will deal with that together. Nisa, Mr. Gladler. Then, housing tenders, the focus. And the Deputy Minister and I will deal with that. About losing my job, I can deal with that. Okay. So, let let's start with the others here. DGO, your nominee, $417 million.
Thank you, Minister. The community rent program, by design, requires that non-profit organizations be contracted to roll out that program. What has given rise to the irregular expenditure that's been referred to in the amounts cited is the fact that when the three-year contract for the implementation of the program was done, what was subsequently found was that the contract that were awarded had some difficulties in the procurement process, which resulted in the contract being said to be irregular. And that gave rise to all monies paid in terms of that contract to be irregular. The contract, I believe, was awarded sometime in 2011, which means that all the payments, however appropriate they may have been, simply because they are based on a contract with the son to have been defective, are regarded, for accounting purposes, as irregular. It doesn't mean that there was a deliberate breach of the rules every year. It simply means that the very basis on which the contracts were founded was itself irregular, and that rendered all the payments over that time irregular. That contract has since come to an end on the 31st of March this year. We now have a new contract. And in fact, the arrangement of the community work program has changed. We no longer have the lead agents. We now have implementing agents. We're paying salaries directly to the participants. The model has changed, and we believe it's more cost-effective as opposed to the first one. So it is my earnest hope that I can give you this commitment that that kind of irregular expenditure shouldn't recur in our books from this current financial year. Thank you very much, Minister.
Let's move to Senior Counsel.
Minister Chair and Honourable Members, the issue of constitutionality, I don't think this is the time or the place to run a seminar in constitutional law. But I think just the key point that needs to be made is that we recognise that our Constitution provides for distinct, interdependent and interrelated spheres of government. So we're not talking about spheres of government that exist on islands separately from each other. Secondly, I mean, when it comes to local government, the Constitution is very emphatic in section 155.7. It says that the national government, subject to section 44 and provincial governments, have the legislative and executive authority to see to the effective performance by municipalities of their functions in respect of the matters listed in schedules 4 and 5. And then it goes on to say by regulating the exercise by municipalities of the executive authority referred to in section 156. So I think it makes it very clear that we're talking about a very interrelated system of cooperative governance, but which in the final instance gives national government arguably not only the right but the duty to regulate certain aspects of the functioning of municipalities. And I think we do that. I mean, I think all of what I've said should be seen in the context of the presentation of Back to Basics made by Minister Gordhan, that we are not seeking from national government to micromanage each and every municipality. That differentiated model that was outlined there is saying clearly where we want to step in is those municipalities that are or bordering on a state of dysfunctionality. No government can countenance such a state of affairs. but where a municipality is functioning well or excellently, that, that differentiated model makes provision for giving them a lot more scope and room for maneuver to be controlling their budget, their grant, the kinds of programs that they engage in. But I think the bottom line is whatever we do, by definition, has to be constitutional. Thanks. The forensic report, I think just to say that is a concern that we share as well. You've alluded to, I think, three forensic reports. The reality is that there are dozens, if not hundreds of others. And we're saying that those need to be acted upon, not only in the context of the criminal law, but as was indicated in Minister Gordhan's presentation of Back to Basics, that we need also to look at other more creative and possibly more effective means, such as the civil claims or asset forfeiture, to recover money from those who have stolen the people's money. Thanks.
What we have done on the question of the forensic report is that one of the branches in COCTA has in fact now started asking municipalities to give us copies of all of their forensic reports. So it takes a bit of time to assemble that, but we have some sense of what that universe looks like, who has acted, who hasn't acted. Again, sometime next year we can come back to you. So we have started the process. We're not sitting with our arms still on this matter, but this is where the interconnected, interrelated also has a fault line, that you now leave it to the municipality to do the right thing once they have paid millions of rands for a forensic report. We'll have to look at the regulatory framework to perhaps strengthen any requirement that once they've spent that kind of money, they must actually act on it. On the question of accessing those reports, in a public sense, forensic reports can make all sorts of claims, you know, but they need to be tested in a court of law before X and Y and Z's name can be put out into the public space. So one of the problems with forensic reports is that it gives you, let's say, a prima facie case and gives you certain evidence and facts, and depending on the quality of the report, you either have a solid case that you can give to a prosecutor or a prosecuting authority, or you have holes in the investigation which need to be filled in by a further investigation by the police. So there's issues of privacy, there's issues of defamation, and so on, that we have to look at carefully before we can say report delivered today on the website tomorrow. But we will explore that. But as long as we understand that nobody here has an interest in hiding anything. If it can be made public, fine, it should be made public. Mr. Kozik.
Thanks, Minister. The question, Minister, on the modern for removal of assets, I think it's a question related to the implications of the disestablishment of municipalities. I think the process of the municipality that is disestablished, or the one that will be receiving, it will be receiving both the liabilities and assets from that municipality that is disestablished. But of course, the whole process is managed process supported by the province to ensure that the whole process of transfer of assets, staff and all of that, and the integration of that municipality into the new municipality is managed well. I think the social implications then, therefore, which are, I think is what the Honourable Member was raising, some of people moving out of the municipality. We need to look at how we manage those. But in terms of issues of assets and liabilities, it is a process that is managed in a responsible way in terms of ensuring that the receiving municipality covers everything. There was also an issue, Minister, on the M&E units. I think that Dr. Sibiho will also add on this one, that there's unevenness in the provinces in terms of that capacity and capability. But of course, I think the presentation on the back to basic clearly indicates that we are in the process of developing performance indicators, and also we'll be working with provinces to ensure that we build that capability, to ensure that we're able to monitor performance at those levels. On the issue of competency requirements, there's regulations that are governing the issue of minimum competencies. And Treasury, working with COCTA, SALGA, and then provincial treasuries and provincial COCTA, they meet on a regular basis to monitor the issue of CFOs who are complying with this. And the figures that I think the minister mentioned, it's figures that are coming from that. But we'll before the end of this meeting, provide the latest figure in this respect.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister, Honorable Deputy Minister, and Honorable Members of the Committee. The project on the system, the MNE system, had to be held because one of the prerequisites to come up with such a system is for the local government performance indicators to be regulated, that would then be used to populate an electronic system that would be an enabling instrument for such a system. We have to put it on hold because that the process of consulting with municipalities, provinces, and sector departments took longer than it was envisaged, and hence the local government indicators were not ready for the electronic system to start. Now, with the advent of back to basics, what we're doing, as the Honorable Minister has already indicated in his presentation, is to make sure that there is an integration of all systems, all data in the system, so that we can have a holistic system that will talk to the whole of government in terms of what sector departments are doing in municipalities and how municipalities are doing themselves. So that was the first one. Just to add on what Mr. Fossey said, I can just confirm that our assessment indeed has shown that the capability, the MNE capability in municipalities is a challenge, because most municipalities will just have an individual who is the head of monitoring and evaluation. We, together with the DCOG, together with DTME, have identified municipalities that needed immediate intervention in that respect, and the teams have been going to municipalities to actually support them to set up systems. However, once the national system has been set up, it will become easier because that is the system that the municipalities would use. Already the Honorable Minister in his presentation did indicate that we would like to work with SEED, especially with the first level of indicators on back to basics, that municipalities are able to report as from the end of the end of November. And to make sure that happens, we are now working with municipalities, especially those that have been identified, to make sure that when that time comes, they will be able to at least report on the back to basic indicators, as we would be working towards a full regulation on local government indicators. Thanks.
Okay, let's follow through.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to be responding to a question on non-achievement of placement in municipalities. Firstly, let me indicate that the success of absorption of artisans and process controllers in municipalities depends on certain preliminaries. Number one, those have got to do with the readiness of the municipality to absorb those skills. And number two, that readiness of course, would have to be informed by the budget. Does the municipality have the budget to absorb those? Number two, the organogram of the municipality, is it structured in such a way that it would be able to absorb such skills after they have been trained through the artisans program or apprenticeship program? So those are some of the hurdles that we had when it comes to the placement of such. However, we have augmented that. For example, if you look into the Zembe model, where we are talking about the placement of artisans and process controllers in municipalities and have that capacity being taken care of financially by MISA. So it is the same model that, again, we have implemented in Emalahleni recently, where we had about 12, when we have about 12 artisans that have completed their apprenticeship program. And we're in a process of finalizing the SLA with the municipality of Emalahleni in Mpumalanga, so that we can have those 12 artisans placed in the municipality. And of course, with an agreement that after 2 years, then the municipality would absorb these into their organogram. So it, in the process, then we'll be working with the municipality to get the municipality ready so that they can be able, after 2 years, then to absorb these skills. So those are some of the hurdles, but this is how we are making up and trying to deal with the challenge of absorption or placement of these skills in municipalities. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. There were two questions on traditional leadership. The first one is the turnaround time on disputes and claims to restore stability in traditional communities. Now, in order for us to respond to the issue of turnaround time, you know, I'm going to categorize these disputes into three categories. The first one is the 1,244 disputes and claims that were lodged with Nkapo Commission in 2004. And Nkapo Commission had a 5-year term, and it expired in January 2010. They had only processed 18 of these claims and kingship claims. So they did not touch the rest of the claims. Now, the remaining claims, which is 1,244, a new commission was established in 2011. Now, the turnaround for all those disputes and claims, the commission that started in 2011, the chairperson is Mr. Tolo, it expires next year in 2015. In December, it has to process 1,244 claims. Now, the commission has a program of action. They started with smaller provinces. I mean, smaller provinces where there are lesser disputes and claims. I remember in 2011, they started in Western Cape with the kingship claims as well as senior traditional leaders. And they completed that. And then Free State, Gauteng, Northern Cape, and so on. So those that are in the queue may be thinking that nothing is being done and so on. There were mechanisms, I think, in 2012 where people, where we communicated to all the claimants to indicate to them, you know, the program of the commission. And that is the first category. The second one is basically the disputes and claims, all the kingship claims, people that submitted their claims to the Nkapo Commission for kingship claims. Those that did not get the kingship, all of them have taken the commission to court. So we've got many cases in court. Some of them started as early as 2010 and so on. They are still in court at the moment. They are not resolved as yet. So we can't give the turnaround of that sort of time because we are not in control of that sort of time. The third category is ongoing royal family disputes and claims. These are supposed to be dealt with in the spirit of back to basics and so on. Already we have started, there's a system, that is the software that DCOG is using for local government and so on. We're also using the same. When local government is talking about hotspots in municipalities, hotspots where there are many disputes and claims, because the stability in traditional communities can, you know, can be brought back when there is stability. And so many of these traditional communities, there are these disputes and claims. Many of them today are more about business interests rather than traditional leadership claims as such. So those that are brought to us, for example, for kingship, the ongoing ones, we resolve them promptly. And those that have to do with senior traditional leaders and so on, they are sent to the provinces. Some of the provinces delay in terms of resolving them. They end up sent to national government. And this is just the background, but in terms of back to basics says that we must put communities first. And we are working on a system where we will ensure that some of these issues, particularly the ongoing ones, are resolved promptly in terms of what the minister has indicated earlier, that when there's something that is failing, we need to attend to it promptly. Thank you very much. Oh, no, that was one of the questions. The second one is that, you know, how do we translate the achievements that we're saying, 97% and so on, in terms of the impact down on the communities and so on. I think the most crucial thing is that in the past, you can see in our reports, we're talking more about developing documents in the boardrooms. Back to basics is talking about putting people first, communities first. We have already, as the Department of Traditional Affairs, aligned our programs to focus on communities. And I think that's how that impact will be achieved, if we focus on communities first. Thank you.
To round up, Chairperson, Mr. Banga's concerns about outside political interference, and those that are responsible for making sure that supply chain processes are run properly must make sure they run properly. And we need to develop a culture in South Africa which ensures that people outside of government follow proper protocols. And I think, Mr. Chair, if I may suggest, in your report to Parliament, you might want to comment on this, that society at large must help us to run clean government. Not just people in political parties, but people in business. Sophisticated business and not so sophisticated business, by the way. Sophisticated business operates in a sophisticated way. And often it doesn't come into the public discourse, but they still get a lot of favors from different quarters. And from different political parties as well. So I think we must establish the rules of the game, make sure that we do the kind of education that we need to do, or promote the ethic that we need to promote within society. And you as a committee, I think it might be very useful for you to comment on this particular area. Then interference in supply chain by politicians, I think it goes beyond the point that Mr. Mullingham has made in terms of processes coming finally at a political level within a municipality. This is about micromanaging processes in the course of the process itself that we are making reference to. But we might have to look at some concrete instances that you have in mind and see what needs to be done. But clearly, this area needs to be revamped, and we would back your point absolutely, and have said so, that there needs to be more public scrutiny. So our department will be engaging with the Treasury to impact our public scrutiny. Not just putting stuff on websites, but when there are big contracts, getting people from civil society, religious figures, senior social figures, societal figures in our communities to come along and watch and make sure that the right processes are in fact being followed. On financing of local government in the long term, I think the basic principles will still operate, that as far as possible, property rates and local charges should be the funding basis of municipalities. Secondly, that more needs to be done on the periphery of, or in the peripheral areas of South Africa, to exploit look and explore economic opportunities, because it's economic development that gives you businesses that can pay property rates and residents who can earn enough to pay the property rates as well. And more focus needs to be placed, Chairperson, in that area. Because otherwise you have what the President was saying the other day, sit back and wait phenomenon. National government will always come along and help you out. And in the current environment, where the Minister of Finance will speak tomorrow about what our economic and fiscal environment is, it might not be as easy as it actually seems. On the outer boundaries, let's come back to you. It's a discussion that we are engaging on with the demarcation board. I know that the first round is completed in October last year, but I don't think that necessarily excludes possibilities now. Without holding back the internal demarcation process in the majority of municipalities, I think you can manage that in the right kind of way. On the maintenance question, Mr. Kosi will come in on that, but you know, I think your point is a good one. Let's define properly what we mean. But the simplest example is perhaps the analogy of a car. You don't service your car when you're supposed to service your car, which could mean replacing oil and tightening a bolt or two, or whatever the case might be. In time, your car won't last more than 2 years, whereas it could have lasted 10 years. And so in the electrical infrastructure context, or the water context, or in the building context, the right kind of things are done at the right time. Roads are a very good example. They have a very clear life cycle in terms of how they should be maintained and replaced. And if that life cycle is not followed, you get into difficulties and have to spend a lot more money. I note your point about Canada, but I think that's a conversation you should have with the Auditor General when he or she makes their appearance here. But we'll try and find out about the point that you make. But thanks for raising it on behalf of our political party. It's very generous of you. In terms of CFOs and what we do about removing those that are wrongfully appointed, as I think Mr. Banga was pointing out, we have now started sending letters to MEC to say we believe X or Y or Z has been improperly appointed in A, B, or C position. Take action. And we are in the early stages of that, and let's see how that can actually get some momentum. We don't want to put people out in the streets, and that's why you still have this one-year gap for those who can get better qualifications or prove their competency in that period and then stay in their job. So I think there's a neat balance, although we will criticize in the media for actually allowing that kind of leeway. The point again made about the balance between local and provincial in the work that we do is a good observation. We accept that. Cooperative government, governance is a lot more than just local government. And we have, if you use those words that are in the Constitution about distinct, interdependent, and interrelated, and we use the word spheres and not levels, and we have key elements of a unitary state with minor elements of a federal state. It is a very complex arrangement that we are running. I know your political party has some views on this as your neighbor, but we have a constitution now, you see, which we negotiated a long time ago. But we've got to give it the right kind of content and make concurrency work in the way it should be working. So your point is taken. Let's see how we can actually engage with it and make it more practical. The point made by Mr. Banga about budgeting, focusing on back to basics, I think that's one of the logical conclusions that we have to arrive at in implementing back to basics. And down the line, I hope that in the next round of budgeting, municipalities will begin to move in that direction or will provide some encouragement for them to move in that direction. Chair, I think subject to whether Mr. Posey wants to add anything on maintenance, we want to vote first.
Thank you very much. Very detailed question. Same way I am now, it's traditional village. I'm very encouraged today. Honorable Mapula.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you.
on a few things. Most of the issues that I have that I wanted to raise, I think have been raised. But just firstly, Chair, just to welcome and congratulate the Minister on the adoption of this program, Back to Basics. I know that most people might want to compare to the previous program that were developed in the past, but I think you can realize that from the presentation this is much more distinct and a focused program, because it identifies the elements which needs to be attended to in local government, so that local government leadership and management can focus on the issues that needs to be attended to, which are a primary function of local government. So let's welcome this and hope that it will be implemented, and as a committee will support the minister on this one. Just to identify a couple of issues on the annual report. One is the under expenditure on infrastructure. I'm a little bit worried, Chair. It's about 240 million, which was underspent, 130 or so municipal infrastructure grant, and 9 million on CWP. It's a little bit worrying, Chair, given the infrastructure challenges that continues to exist in our country, and this money should have assisted in addressing the infrastructure backlog. We are still very, very far in making sure that we put the necessary infrastructure to support our economy. So I'm a little bit worried about this, and I'd like to find out from the department what is it that is going to be done to make sure that the money like this that has been allocated does indeed go to where it's supposed to, where it's needed the most. I know that some of the money might have been withheld due to poor performance by municipalities on the municipal infrastructure grant. But as we said in the past, Chair, I think there is an opportunity to incentivize those municipalities which are performing much better on this one, because the need will always exceed, will always be far greater than the resources. So I think the department should come up with some innovative methods to make sure that those municipalities which are performing better are incentivized, and the money that is not spent somewhere is redirected, so that those that are capable of spending must be allocated money to spend. But similarly, and I think this is where MISA needs to come in, to support those municipalities which are struggling to spend the infrastructure grant. And I think, Honorable Minister, the fundamental question which I think needs to be confronted, and I hope that you will deal with it, is what do we want to do with MISA? What exactly are we... what is our conception of the task of this agency? Because when it was established, it was intended to support municipalities to be able to spend the infrastructure grants. And the extent to which it is doing that is something that I think the minister must look deeply into this question, including the appointment of a substantive staff of this agency. Because last week, the Auditor General, they have raised issues about the municipal infrastructure grant
and some of the issues that they are raising are recurring. So my recommendation is that the minister needs to, on an urgent basis, deal with this issue about MISA, redefine its role, or clarify its role if the role is there, clarify its role and its relationship to the the role in the department, the role in the department and the support function is supposed to give to municipalities. And finally appoint staff here so that this agency can then start to function properly. Now, Chair, I see the Minister is flagging about three issues that require policy review, one of which is I can't remember the word exactly, but strengthening the district municipalities. The second one, yes, I've got it here. I want to go to it, but I think I'm going to waste time. But, yeah. Slide number, on page 20, strengthening district municipalities, review unviable municipalities, and the procedure to implement differentiation. I think there's an opportunity, Chair, to, as part of this policy review, to also review legislation that impact negatively on local government generally, which is something that I think we've spoken about it before, and I know that SALGA also has got a submission on that, that there is a number of legislation that has been identified which impacts negatively on local government and which needs to be reviewed. Reviewed in the context of differentiation. Not to say deal away with everything that imposes an obligation on municipalities to do certain things and to report in a certain way. But introduce differentiation in a manner that will make sure that those municipalities with less capacity, their hands are freed from having to deal with all these onerous requirements from legislation so that they can be able to focus on some of the things that they are struggling to do currently because they've got no capacity to be able to do that. And lastly, Chair, just a clarification, there's an issue on the annual report about donor funding, which was returned back, I think it's 1.3 million. Just to get clarity on that and the conditions. I think it was meant for local economic development initiatives. So if the department can just respond on that, but congratulate the departments, both traditional affairs, on the 97% attainment of predetermined objectives and cooperative governance on, I think it's also over 90% performance base.
Okay, thank you, Bella. Another question that colleagues want to ask? Okay, let us invite the
on the policy review, I think implicit in C on the board is the point made by the Honourable Member, because it is linked to the one size fits all scope differentiation. So that can happen. Do you have any particular consideration in mind? On MIG, there is a review going on at the moment. So how efficiently to spend, who spends, who doesn't spend. But remember also that one of the fault lines on MIG, which will come out of the report, is that some municipalities is a very small amount, 10 million, 12 million, 14 million, with which you can't actually do anything significant. So funding infrastructure development differently is one of the issues that we're looking at with the Treasury, so that perhaps at a district level we can do more bulking up and get some of that work done. On MISA, there's good work going on. There's engineers and technical people spread all over the country doing what they have to do. The real issue is how do we leverage that better and collaborate with other institutions like PBSA. So as I pointed out earlier on, that's part of the review. We will then look at what the top layer of staff should look like, and by early next year have that in place, as I indicated. On the donor funding matter, the DG might want to give a quick explanation.
Thank you, Minister. I'm going to ask Mr. Fossey, who at the time was responsible for the local economic development program, to answer.
Thanks, DJ. The amount referred to, the 1.3, it's actually money that was not for the GIZ, but it was funds from the EU project for LED. The project came to an end in 2010-11 financial year. And these were funds which the EU, based on the conditionalities that we had to return, which were not actually implemented at that stage. Thanks.
Okay, well, it seems we are happy now. The Mandela Metro representation.
No, not about that. Not about that, Chief. It's not about that. I'm not afraid of pink labor Nelson Mandela. I'm proud today. Chair, the issue on graduates was not responded adequately, but I want the minister to look at this aspect. What is that thing with MISA? Minister, we need an immediate attention into that because of the dire need from the students for placement. That we can't say whilst there is an available opportunity for placement of students to various skills programs, and we have a report like that. And to be honest with you, many institutions that are involved in terms of placement are actually the municipalities than any government department. Therefore, I don't want to accept that kind of response, and I think I want to give it to you to say please kindly look at that aspect. Thank you.
Chair, I'll be giving it to him to look at, but I will monitor that. I think the basic point that we all agree on is that firstly, we need a lot more people in the various fields of engineering that are relevant in a municipal environment. Secondly, we need to give these young people an opportunity to be trained. And thirdly, once they've received the training, they need to get jobs. But more importantly, they need to collect experience under their belt, because it's experience that will determine whether they can do the job or not. So that ability to learn and develop their experience. So on those things we all agree. The question is how. Let's come back to you on some of those issues. Thank you very much.
Okay. So thank you very much, Honorable Minister and the team. You may want to take your 2 minutes to do your overall conclusion. I think the members are happy. It seems they're saying they're going to their house, they're extremely happy. 97%, 90% performance at department is fine, notwithstanding the problem. But it seems we are moving forward.
And don't repeat that too often, because then the DG will be waiting for trophies now. You know? But firstly, thank you very much for hearing us out and for receiving the reports on the annual report so positively. Secondly, we appreciate the support. government, because remember the key motto here is put people first, not political parties first. So if you want to improve the conditions in which millions of our people live, then let's focus on that in the way we should. Thirdly, implementing that program is something that we can do in part, but a lot of it, all of you can help to contribute as well, Chairperson. And it would be good if in your report you could embrace some of the comments made by yourselves so that other members of Parliament and the public can become aware of them. And then finally, there's going to be hard work between now and say probably February next year in setting up the machinery, both at our level but also at a provincial and municipal level as well, in order to make sure that our aspirations, simple as they might be, can actually begin to dig their roots fairly deep in the municipal environment. And of course, working with all the different partners, we hope we can change the performance that we see at the municipal level. And thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Minister and Secretary, issues and the team. Well, if you want to remain, you would appreciate that. If there are other commitment, of course, we will also not bother you to remain here. But if you want to remain there, you will be much more happier. And then assisting us on other issues that you want you to be in, and Sarka is coming in. And then I think back to basics, and Sarka also to take some of those issues seriously. Okay, colleagues, thank you very much. Thank you.